Welcome to Journal Club. I'm Malcolm Diggs. Let's take a trip back to 2015. NVIDIA was still, for all intents and purposes, a gaming company. YOLO V1 had just landed on Archive, and if you were trying to run a neural net outside of a data center, you were either an academic, a hobbyist, or maybe just doing something weird with Raspberry Pis. Back then, edge inference was practically synonymous with toy project. Nobody seriously expected to deploy deep CNN into an industrial environment running on constrained hardware. It just wasn't feasible. But that constraint didn't stop people from trying. Around this time, entire lines of research emerged to compress and quantize these models. Papers like Deep Compression, MobileNet, and SqueezeNet all took turns answering a version of the same question. How small can we make a network before the accuracy falls off a cliff? Now, fast forward a decade, and that question isn't academic anymore. It's operational. Today, real industrial systems are running deep models in production environments, where cloud inference is too slow, too expensive, or simply not permitted. These are, for example, edge-deployed anomaly detectors, visual inspection models, and maintenance classifiers. And they're running unconstrained silicon, CPUs with weak thermal envelopes, embedded GPUs, even microcontrollers. And that's not going away. The trend line is clear. More compute is migrating to the edge, and the bottleneck isn't model architecture anymore. It's efficiency. Which brings us to pruning. Not the academic toy versions where we zero out weights after training and pat ourselves on the back for hitting 90% sparsity, the actual deployment-oriented kind, where latency and power consumption are being measured alongside accuracy. Where engineers care if a ResNet 18 can still detect a faulty bearing without drawing an extra watt. Where sparse network doesn't mean a slide deck trick, but a production candidate. The paper we're looking at today doesn't introduce a novel pruning algorithm. Instead, it does something arguably more useful. It runs a head-to-head empirical comparison of four different pruning strategies: pre-training, in-training, post-training, and sparse evolutionary training, SET. And it does all of this on two widely used models, VGG16 and ResNet 18, across three datasets that mimic industrial workloads. It evaluates not just accuracy, but also training time, inference speed, and energy usage. The authors care about whether a pruned model is actually deployable on real hardware, and they benchmark on both a high-end HPC node and a consumer-grade laptop to show how the story changes with context. I believe this paper is valuable and worth our time, not because it's novel, but because it's rigorous. It reflects the kinds of decisions engineers face when selecting models for deployment. And if you're working on applied machine learning systems, especially in industrial or embedded contexts, it gives you something rare: actionable data, reproducible comparisons, and clear trade-offs. So today, we're not talking theory, we're talking shop. On this episode, we're going to walk through the structure and results of their comparison in detail, but first we need to cover a few basics. Let's start with pruning itself. What is it? Why do we need it? And why is it important? If you work in manufacturing, energy, or logistics, you've likely seen this pattern play out. Systems that used to be passive or dumb are getting sensors, cameras, and embedded processors slapped on them in the hopes of making them smart. Anomaly detection for rotating machinery. Real-time classification of conveyor belt items, fault prediction in distributed pumps. What all of these have in common is the need to deploy computer vision or time series models directly at the edge. And a lot of what's getting rolled out on factory floors today is still running on commodity x86 laptops or Jetson-class boards with limited memory, power, and heat tolerance. So while there may be a bounty of models that fit on paper, they don't always fit in production. Deep learning models like ResNet 18 and VGG16 are still the standard in many industrial computer vision systems. They're well understood, widely supported, and pre-trained versions are readily available. But they're also computationally heavy. VGG16, for example, has around 138 million parameters. ResNet 18 is more efficient, but still not edged optimized. Out of the box, these models are designed for cloud-scale inference, not embedded deployment. There are a few levers that teams can pull when trying to slim down a model. Quantization is one. Architectural replacement is another, but pruning, that is aggressively removing weights or entire filters from the network, remains one of the simplest and most effective strategies when the goal is to reduce runtime cost without retraining the model from scratch or switching to a brand new architecture. Pruning is not a new idea. What's changed is that we now have a much better sense of what kinds of pruning work best for which workloads and constraints. In the context of this paper, that means the goals are not just accuracy. They are power consumption, inference latency, memory footprint, and compatibility with devices that might not have a GPU at all. The authors explicitly focus on these constraints. Their evaluation includes not only datasets like MNIST to validate against prior work, but industry-relevant benchmarks like VESA and MVTech 3D. They also evaluate across two CNNs, VGG16 and ResNet 18, chosen not because they're state-of-the-art, but because they're realistic and common choices. As I mentioned, they compare four specific pruning strategies with clearly defined implementation paths and reproducible parameter settings. They measure these strategies across multiple sparsity levels and track not just performance on test sets, but also training time, memory usage, and energy consumption. If you want to conceptualize this article as trying to answer a set of questions, it would be the following. Given a fixed architecture and dataset, how much sparsity can you get away with before your model collapses? And which pruning strategies let you push that boundary the farthest at the lowest cost? The reason this framing matters is that it moves pruning out of the realm of one-off experimentation and into something more prescriptive. Engineers deploying models to real-world systems need to know not just that pruning can work, but how much it helps, when it works best, and which methods are most robust for the types of constraints they actually face. This paper aims to answer those questions. It's not about winning a Kaggle competition. It's about building a viable path from standard dense CNNs to energy-efficient, inference-ready, sparse networks that you can actually deploy without rewriting your whole pipeline. In practice, pruning a neural network isn't one thing, which is why they tested four. These sparsification strategies share a common goal: reduce the number of parameters without tanking performance. But they differ substantially in how and when connections are removed. Some are performed before training starts, some happen mid-flight, some are static, some evolve dynamically, and one of them rewires the network on every pass. Let's walk through each one. Not in taxonomic detail, we don't have that kind of time, but in terms of what's actually different under the hood. Pre-training pruning. This is what you'd expect if you'd worked with static pruning or tried L1-based compression in PyTorch or TensorFlow. The model starts with a dense set of weights. Then the weakest ones, measured using the L1 norm, are zeroed out before training begins. In their setup, this means computing the L1 magnitude of each connection in a layer, ranking them, and dropping the bottom X percent to hit a predefined sparsity level. It's simple and deterministic, but once you kill a connection, it's gone for good. You're locking the sparsity structure in place before the model has had a chance to learn which pathways might end up being important. That trade-off, less training overhead but no flexibility, is a recurring theme across the other methods as well. In training pruning, this method is more dynamic. The pruning process runs every epoch. After each round of backpropagation, the algorithm identifies the weakest 20% of active connections, again using L1 scores, and replaces them with previously pruned weights. These replacements are chosen at random from the pool of zeroed out weights. Effectively, this creates a fixed size parameter budget that gets reshuffled as the model learns. Connections that turn out to be less useful get dropped. New ones get a chance to prove themselves. If you've worked with dropout, the behavior is different, it's not stochastic at inference time, but the underlying idea is similar. Encourage exploration, but keep the model small. Note that this method requires reapplying masks and updating model weights in each epoch, so it comes with computational overhead, but potentially better convergence and generalization. Post-training pruning. This is the laziest method, and in many cases the least effective. You train the model as normal with a fully dense architecture, and only afterward do you prune connections using L1 magnitude. In this case, the network never adapts to the sparsity. It learns a full solution and then you try to amputate parts of it without any retraining or fine-tuning. Obviously, not ideal. But there are two advantages. One, it's trivial to implement. Two, you can generate multiple sparsity variants from a single trained model checkpoint without repeating the training process. But the downside is significant. You risk cutting critical pathways the network was relying on, and because no retraining happens after the fact, the model never actually recovers. It doesn't have a chance to. In this paper, post-training pruning reliably underperformed compared to others. That's consistent with prior work in both vision and language domains. Sparse evolutionary training, SET. This is the most complex of the four methods, but also the most interesting. It takes the in-training pruning framework and layers on a new kind of initialization. Instead of building the initial sparse network with a uniform random mask, it uses the Erdos-Renyi model to construct the graph of initial connections. This model probabilistically connects pairs of nodes with a defined edge probability, producing a sparse but statistically structured network. After initialization, SET proceeds almost identically to the in-training method. 20% of the weakest connections are pruned and replaced at each epoch. The key difference is in the starting topology. Erdos-Renyi gives you a more evenly connected graph out of the gate, which helps with stability and gradient flow early in training. SET is not new, it was introduced in 2018, but its adoption has been uneven, partly because it's more complicated to implement and partly because the benefits weren't always obvious. This paper gives SET a more rigorous industrial benchmarking context and shows that under resource constraints, it offers consistently strong performance on both accuracy and energy efficiency. Taken together, these four strategies form a useful design space. Pre-training is fast and clean. In-training is dynamic but more expensive. Post-training is convenient but weak. SET balances dynamic rewriting with structured initialization. Each one makes a different bet on when the model should figure out which connections matter and how often that decision should be revisited. To evaluate the trade-offs between these strategies, the authors controlled for nearly every variable that a practicing engineer would care about. As I mentioned, they used two base models and three datasets. Each model was trained with identical hyperparameters, 50 epochs, batch size of 64, learning rate fixed at 1/10,000. This configuration was used across all model dataset combinations. Each experiment was repeated three times to average out random seed variance. The pruning swamp ratio, where applicable, was fixed at 20% of weights per epoch, consistent with best practices from earlier sparse training literature. The only variables that changed across runs were the pruning method and the three sparsity levels. 1. Uniform high sparsity. 80% pruning applied to both convolutional and linear layers. 2. Mixed sparsity. 80% pruning for linear layers, 50% pruning for convolutional layers. Or 3. Linear-only sparsity. 80% pruning applied only to linear layers, convolutional layers left intact. The models were evaluated across 9 metrics. Accuracy, precision, recall, F1 score, training time, inference time, energy usage, training and inference phases separately, training loss, and GPU memory consumption. Loss and accuracy were monitored across every epoch. Time and energy were captured at the batch level and averaged across runs. Now we get to the part that matters. What worked, what didn't, and under what conditions? The first thing to know is that uniform high sparsity across both convolutional and linear layers tanked model performance, especially in early convolutional layers where accuracy collapsed and learning stalled. However, when sparsity was applied more selectively, dialing it back on convolutional layers while keeping linear layers heavily pruned, accuracy recovered significantly. Among all methods, SET consistently delivered the best balance of accuracy and efficiency by dynamically updating sparse connections during training. Pruning only the linear layers proved safe and effective, offering major resource savings with virtually no impact on accuracy. While SET and other dynamic methods added modest training overhead, they often still trained faster than dense models, especially on ResNet 18. Pruned models also ran faster at inference, with SET offering the best trade-off between speed and accuracy. Energy usage dropped across the board in sparse configurations, with SET models consistently being the most power efficient. So, if your goal is to build deployable vision models for edge devices in industrial environments, this paper gives you a working recipe. Use ResNet 18. Use SET. Apply 80% sparsity to the linear layers, 50% to the convolutional layers, and monitor training carefully. You'll get models that run faster, consume less power, and still hit production-grade accuracy. Just don't treat sparsity as a uniform knob. The convolutional layers are the workhorses of your model. You can't zero them out blindly. But if you handle them with care and prune aggressively in the linear layers, where there's more redundancy, you'll get a smaller, faster, and more deployable model that actually holds up in production. The implication is not just that sparsity works, but that sparsity is now mature enough to be tuned and deployed systematically. But don't take the author's word for it, or mine for that matter. The results are reproducible and architecture agnostic. If you want to find out if this setup will work for you, download the paper, copy their playbook, and see what kind of results you get on your hardware. The appendices walk through each pruning method with enough clarity to implement them directly in PyTorch. And the energy usage data, which is broken down across devices and sparsity levels, makes it easy to justify architectural decisions to anyone holding the budget. Whether you're benchmarking inference pipelines or trying to hit latency targets at the edge, the paper gives you a roadmap that, in my opinion, is actually useful. Thank you for joining me on today's episode of Journal Club. Hope you enjoyed it. Malcolm Diggs signing off. See you tomorrow.